thousands of people turned out across Wisconsin to protest the Trump administration's cuts to government programs, we'll hear from some of the protesters. It's Monday, April 7th, and this is Wisconsin Today Morning News. Good morning, I'm Alex Crow. Coming up on the show today, federal scientists who were helping Milwaukee respond to its lead crisis have been laid off. And some Republicans are pointing fingers after the party's preferred Supreme Court candidate lost by double-digit points last week. Stay with us.
At Morning Edition from NPR News, we're talking about what you're talking about.
Beyoncé is not only revealing Black cowboy culture, she's transforming country music forever.
Trying to understand the world.
What does this ceasefire proposal say?
And sometimes, annoying Jerry Seinfeld.
Are you seriously asking that?
Join us every weekday for a well-rounded start to your morning.
Thousands of Wisconsinites turned out Saturday to protest the leadership of President Donald Trump and Elon Musk. Hope Kerwin has more from La Crosse, where protesters took over a busy intersection to voice their frustrations.
La Crosse area protesters chanted and cheered as drivers honked their support for the hands-off rally. It was one of dozens held across the state on Saturday in connection with a national movement. Demonstrators held signs calling for protections for Social Security, Medicare, and public education. Liz Daines from Lafarge said she wanted to bring her parents to the protest. Her mom, Sharon, is a former Head Start teacher, and her dad, Russell, is an Army vet and retired union worker.
Everything that my parents have worked for is just under siege, and we don't want to see that.
Protesters also gathered in cities like Madison, Green Bay, and Milwaukee. Hope Kerwin, Wisconsin Public Radio.
Conservatives are searching for answers, and some are pointing fingers after a bruising Wisconsin Supreme Court defeat. A well-known conservative radio host accused the Wisconsin Republican Party of only knocking on around 40,000 doors during the race. Milwaukee County's GOP chair called for swift accountability at the state party level in a social media post. Other posts have called for state GOP chair Brian Schimming to resign. Sawyer County Republican Party chair John Righeimer is standing by Schimming. He says conservatives need to stop catering to MAGA voters that he claims will only vote if President Donald Trump is on the ballot.
But, you know, if Trump is the president and the leader of the Republican Party, it's hard to say go against that, even though I think that's the winning formula. And so maybe we just have to go through these tough times of looking more like Minnesota and Illinois for a bit.
Righeimer says while catering to Trump-only voters works for primaries and presidential races, it does not help in off-year general elections. Federal public health layoffs mean the Milwaukee Health Department will be losing expert help with the lead crisis at Milwaukee Public Schools. Evan Casey reports on the impact of the cuts.
The Milwaukee Health Department was getting technical assistance from staff with the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention for its response to the lead crisis. But City Health Commissioner Mike Todoritis said he learned this week those positions were cut. It comes as lead hazards have been found in 7 schools in the city, while 4 students have tested positive for lead poisoning so far. Todoritis also recently learned the city won't get help from a CDC team that would have been on the ground in Milwaukee to respond to the crisis.
This is a really significant issue for our city, and it is historic that this is happening at the same time that the federal government is gutting public health.
3 schools in Milwaukee are still closed for lead remediation work. Evan Casey, Wisconsin Public Radio.
The Trump administration is giving public K-12 schools 10 days to eliminate diversity, equity, and inclusion programs or be at risk of losing federal funding. The U.S. Department of Education said Title I funding would be threatened if schools don't sign a letter saying they comply with civil rights laws. Title I is a federal program that provides funding to school districts with a high percentage of children from low-income families. It's designed to help ensure that all students can meet academic standards. Wisconsin received about $216 million in Title I funds this year. State Superintendent Jill Underly says the Department of Public Instruction is reviewing the Trump administration's authority to require the action. Federal authorities have not clearly defined what the administration considers a violation of civil rights law. The administration says school districts are using DEI programs to discriminate against one group of Americans to favor another. Wisconsin consumers will likely pay more for goods imported from dozens of countries that will now be taxed at higher rates. Daniel Kading has more on the effects of tariffs announced by President Donald Trump last week.
The Trump administration is taxing imports anywhere from 10 to 50%, depending on the country. Canada and China are responding with retaliatory tariffs on products. Nearly half of all Wisconsin's imports come from Canada, China, and Mexico. Marco Bostel is director of the Center for Supply Chain Management at Marquette University. He says some companies may be able to absorb all or some costs, but most will be passed on to consumers.
We can see in general, at least in short term, prices for many products actually going up.
The Yale Budget Lab estimates the average consumer will pay around $2,100 more a year for goods. Bostel says retaliatory tariffs will slow exports of Wisconsin products in those countries. Trump says tariffs will protect American companies from unfair foreign competition. Danielle Kading, Wisconsin Public Radio.
Coming up, a new novel is set in a haunted Milwaukee neighborhood. We'll hear from the author in today's Wisconsin Life. Stay with us.
Thank you to the donors who make Wisconsin Public Radio possible. There are more than 50,000 of you. Your generosity delivers essential news, thought-provoking conversations, and inspiring music to listeners all over Wisconsin and beyond. Your support makes a difference in people's lives every day. Thank you.
And finally, it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Tyler Ditter with a story about a spooky book, which takes place in Milwaukee.
Imagine that you're a 12-year-old Milwaukee Sentinel paperboy wandering through an unknown Milwaukee neighborhood on a cold Wisconsin winter evening in 1987. Dan Coyce has been there, and it made such an impression on him that he's written a frightening and funny novel all about it. The book is called Hampton Heights, One Harrowing Night in the Most Haunted Neighborhood in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Coy sat down with Doug Gordon of WPR's Beta to talk about writing the book and living through the events that inspired the book.
Hampton Heights is the story of six middle school paperboys who live around the east side and in Milwaukee. They're all taken out in a van by their stupid manager, Kevin, to sell Milwaukee Sentinel subscriptions in a neighborhood chosen randomly, in this case, Hampton Heights. They're set loose on the streets in pairs. They're told whoever sells the most gets $20, and when it's all over, they all get to go to Burger King. While they're there, they also discover that they have been inadvertently dropped into Milwaukee's most haunted neighborhood, and each pair of boys, as well as their stupid manager, Kevin, will have to encounter and overcome certain supernatural creatures. What I imagined was not only the monsters, but also the kind of delicate but real peace and comedy between two populations that are in those sort of similar moments of transition, moments that sometimes can create real strife, but in other circumstances create a kind of like banding together and a comprehension that for all these populations' differences and for all the real tensions between them, they're in the same boat. And the real enemy is the corporations, the factories that are closing, the people who are trying to keep those middle class or working class people down.
These kids are dealing with witches, trolls, werewolves, and hodags. How do the kids react to these creatures?
They react often in terror, but they're also kids who have watched a lot of horror movies, read a lot of Stephen King, and view these monsters they encounter as bigger and weirder challenges than the challenges they usually face, but not truly unique. They're still in scrapes that they feel they can think, talk, or act their way out of. Part of the fun of the book, I think, is watching each of these pairs of kids find the reserves inside themselves to help them overcome or survive these scrapes they get into. And so I wanted to show these kids being surprised and frightened, but also feeling like oh, I wonder how I can get out of this one. In the same way they would think, oh, I wonder how I can get out of the big kids from the high school caught me throwing water balloons at their car or something like that.
You have said that as you were writing Hampton Heights, you started thinking of it as gentle horror. How so?
As I said, I'm cagey about spoiling what happens in individual stories, but I love making sure everyone knows before they start this book that at the end of the book, the kids are fine and they go to Burger King. That's important to me. You know, I liked the idea of a story in which the kids are in peril in some way and they face challenges. But what you're going through as a reader is not the kind of prototypical horror experience of waiting for the author to punish them in some unique, shocking, surprising, or delightful way. I wanted the sort of unbelievable creativity in this book to come out of the ways the kids find to escape these experiences. And so it was important to me to always sort of give off the vibe in the book that whatever happens, these kids are going to make it through and they're not going to suffer too badly. Now, adults, who knows? Adults might be fair game. Sorry to their manager, Kevin. You never know what's going to happen to that guy. But the kids are going to get their burgers.
That was author Dan Coyce, who grew up in Milwaukee. To hear the full conversation, check out WPR's Beta. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and PBS Wisconsin in partnership with Wisconsin Humanities. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. I'm Tyler Ditter.
And finally, quick check of weather before letting you go for the day. Mostly cloudy and cold today with highs in the 30s and 40s. It's also going to be really windy with gusts up near 30 miles per hour. And we could see some scattered flurries, especially in northern Wisconsin. That wind will start to die down overnight and into tomorrow. And that'll do it for this Monday. Thanks so much for joining us for Wisconsin Today Morning News. I'm your host, Alex Crow, and our producers today were Bridget Bowden and John Davis. As always, tell a friend, leave us a rating and review, help spread the word. We really do appreciate it. Have a great rest of your day. We'll talk to you again soon.